Welcome to the Fit Girl Magic Podcast. If you are ready to find your inner magic, develop great habits, and a rock steady mindset to feel confident, comfortable, and fit in your body, you are in the right place. I am Kim Barnes Jefferson, and I'll be giving you weekly doses of health, fitness, and life tips sprinkled with humor and real talk. If you're ready to be consistent without the stress of perfection, magic makers, it's time to slip into your favorite pair of PJs, grab some coffee, kick back, and listen to today's show. This week's iTunes review is brought to you by Jackie O. Jazz Hands. She writes, a great, funny podcast about real topics we all struggle with. Kim gives great advice and support to people to live their best life. That just fills my heart. Thank you so much for taking the time to write me that 5-star review. And for those of you who have yet to leave that 5-star review, all you have to do is go on to iTunes or wherever you listen to this podcast and do the same thing, and I will read it on the air. So thank you so much, Jackie O. Jazz Hands. It fills me up when I read those reviews from the heart. Enjoy the podcast. Today, I had the opportunity to speak with Miss Tracy Brown. We had an amazing conversation. It went all over the place, but I know that you are really going to dig into this. It really focused around how do you trust yourself around food and listen to your body? And, you know, she talked to us about resilience. How do we stop going with what doesn't feel good? How do we start to take that pause and really understand what it is that we want to accomplish? You know, why do our goals mean so much to us? And who are you without being on a diet? Who are you without all of your diet rules? And she helped us to really focus on how do you become more productive with your health and your fitness so that we are no longer, you know, hating our bodies and no longer listening to the intuitive nature of our body. It was a great conversation. She is so down to earth, so helpful, and let's just get into the show because you will really take away a number of pieces from this. Enjoy. Oh, magic makers. Today, I have Miss Tracy Brown. She is a registered dietitian. And what I love about, there's certain dietitians who follow the book, and there's certain dietitians who realize that, you know what, that playbook was written a long time ago, and it needs a major rewrite. And I'm not sure who's in charge of making that major rewrite, but I'm happy when I find RDs who are like, you know what? Let's figure out how to make life and nutrition work for real people. And Miss Tracy Brown is just that person. She has so many different facets to her body of work. It's just ridiculous. Like, she's just like, I can't wait to start this conversation. So I'm just going to hop in. I'm going to shut my mouth and I'm going to talk with Ms. Tracy Brown. Welcome to the show, Tracy.
Oh, holy cow, Kim. Thank you so much for that. I am doing, you can't see it, but I'm blushing a bit because it's like every single facet was just because like, oh my gosh, somebody's suffering and there's what I've been trying to do is not going to work. So let's figure it out. Basically. Yeah. So it's born out of like, not desperation, but a little bit of like, yeah, I don't know everything. And so let's work on that. We're going to co-pilot this together and figure it out. So,
you know, it's funny because I feel like when you go to school for nutrition, you know, they lay it out. They're like, this is what the world's going to be about. And then you get out in the real world. You're like, have you been in the real world? Like, have you seen what actual people are struggling with?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I'd be happy to share kind of like how that evolved.
Yeah, that would be great.
Because and everything keeps evolving on the next thing. So I'm hoping there's a piece of something here for everybody. So I was lucky to grow up with, I guess, quote unquote, a normal eating family, probably like, you know, lower middle class. And we had a farm. So it's like it wasn't cool what we did back then. Like, oh, you have a garden, you know, like
right
kind of stuff, you know, but we did it for necessity kind of things, you know? And so I was very lucky to have a pretty normal relationship with food. But unfortunately, you know, like so many of us, you know, our mothers and grandmothers and great grandmothers didn't know that like diet culture was really like this systemic thing. They just thought that's something they had to do.
Right.
And so by osmosis, you're around it. So I really didn't start feeling like there's something totally wrong or I had to watch food or weight till I was 8. And I didn't do anything about it until I was 16, till many other factors that kind of like imploded in life.
Right.
To create this thing. And so anyway, you know, there's lots of storyline to go down the road with that, but I'll save that for another time. But it's like, to get some healing, I kind of had to, I ended up actually meeting a non-diet dietitian, which in 1996, that wasn't a thing and it wasn't a name, wasn't anything. It was right. This really nice lady who was like, look, like I can't make you eat more and I can't make you trust anything or anybody or anything. But I had this question one time, this blew the door open, was I felt like I couldn't eat the same food more than one time in a day.
Right.
And she said, well, who says you can't? She said, who says you can't have X, Y, Z dinner rolls in a day if that's the thing you feel comfortable with eating to get your brain and yourself re-nourished and get your life back? And I'm like, oh, I have a choice. Choice? Whoa. You're not telling me that I have to eat 5 fruit and vegetables a day to be healthy. You're not telling me that I can only eat X amount of calories.
Right.
She was like, clearly you want those dinner rolls and those feel doable to you. Who says you can't do that? And I'm like, whoa, this is great. And that was the beginning really of some of my healing from anorexia and binge eating and exercise compulsion, all that. And I thought, wow, I think I want to do that. And that's pretty typical of people's stories who get into the health profession of any kind, that you're
right.
Healed yourself. You want to help other people kind of stuff. But anyway, so I go to school to be a dietitian thinking that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to like help people really feel like come home to themselves and heal a relationship with food and stop this dieting nonsense that makes everybody actually more malnourished and not any smaller in the long run.
Exactly.
And I get there and it's like, oh, you know, there's some good aspects. I'm learning about like physiology and all these great, great things that how the body works, but we're pretty much glorified diet pushers. We think we're above Weight Watchers and XYZ diets. So if I'm recommending the same amount of calories and I think that's okay to, if weight loss is the end all be all of health, then I don't know what I'm doing here and I better figure out something else. So I'm screwed if
right.
I don't figure out something. So basically I get out of school and I start trying to unlearn about 50% of what I learned around people and how they actually eat. Like you talked about in your intro, people's relationship with food, their body image, what their history is, how come it feels like you have to lose weight? Where did you hear that from and who says? And taken in as all these different intersections of like our cultural history of food and our, how we feel like we belong in our family systems, how we feel like we belong in the culture. Who do you want to belong to? And that makes a difference. All those things about how you choose to eat every day.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I want to go back to what you just said, you know, I think maybe in this generation won't experience it as much as the previous generations where, you know, it wasn't wrong. I don't know if the word wrong is the right word, but it wasn't, I'm going to use wrong. It wasn't wrong for your parents to say to you, hey, Tracy, I think you're putting on a little weight, or, hey, you know, like that wasn't something that you would be like, is it going to scar her for the rest of her life? Like you didn't think
about it.
You didn't think about it. And, you know, there's a, I was listening to a podcast and I cannot think of the name of it right now, but she talked about like, when did weight become a thing? And she said, if you look back, she goes, Google family reunion. She goes, any family reunion and just go to the images. And you, if you go back as far as, you know, Google images will allow, you will see that like, there was never a heavy person in anyone's family. And then, you know, roughly the, you know, maybe a heavy grandmother, but everyone else is pretty thin. And then the, you know, the 70s and the 80s, and now you're, you know, the ever expanding family size.
Well, it's interesting because like I grew up in the 70s and 80s, and there was just a little of everybody. There was fat people, medium people, small people. And yeah, to your point, people wouldn't think twice about, like, I wonder if I'm trashing my own body in front of my daughter or granddaughter, might that impact how they think what's up for them next as they grow up? Are they, you know, they're not, you're not thinking, like, oh, this is going to make them hate themselves when they're 20 or 16 or 40.
Right.
And how they complain about their bodies. And I do really think that there's a lot of correlation between, like, when dieting became really, like, that's just normalized.
Yeah.
So I do think people have gotten bigger because of that. Not because that we're somehow more out of control or more emotionally wrought or more or traumatized. There's always been that stuff. It's now we think the solution for every emotional or health problem is, like, well, go on a diet and then you'll fix yourself and you'll be happy ever after. It just actually makes people bigger in the long run.
You know, it's funny. And it is, I did another interview this morning and we were talking about, you know, chasing the happiness, chasing the worthiness. And, you know, so many of us believe that, you know, on the other side of the diet is whatever the heck we're looking for.
It's the glory. I was like, oh, my life will be effortless and I'll never have a hard time. My bills will be easier to be paid. Like, everybody will like me. And all you actually get is a smaller body size. And now your brain's kind of filled up with stuff that take up a bunch of time.
Right.
You have a smaller body, but okay.
Right. Or I had to literally, like, crash my way into this body. And there's no way to, or there's two thoughts. You crashed your way into this, so there's no way you could sustain it. Or two, you know, we think that, like, a diet's like set it and forget it. Like, I dieted, I hit the goal weight, I got down that dress size, now I can go back to regular eating. And my body won't eventually, like, you know, rise back up again.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's not where it's, that's not the narrative we're taught, right? It's like you use all your willpower. Doesn't matter what your body biology is, or the, nobody talks about the science of semi-starvation and how the body will adapt to, like, keep you from dying.
Right.
It's, you think that once you eat less enough, you get to your weight and then the book ends and that's it. It's like, well, now your body has to deal with, like, how do I sustain life?
Right.
You know, and either your body has to eat more to do that, or you're perpetually a dieter, probably crossing the line to being, having an eating disorder. That's your only two options, really.
Right. And, you know, I work with a lot of girls who've come out of the fitness competitive world. You know, it's funny. And I always say to them, you know, they always ask me, like, well, Kim, like, what's the difference between an eating disorder and disordered eating? And I was like, it's a fine line. And I said, you know, similar to what you said, you know, where you're like, I can't eat the same thing in a day, you know? So it's like, if I had tomatoes for breakfast, I can't have tomatoes again for the rest of the day. So it's like, that's part of an eating disorder, but it's also disordered eating.
That's right.
And so I was like, for a lot of you, like, if you have a lot of rules, that's disordered eating. And especially if the rules only make sense to you.
That's right. There's no scientific base. Like, everybody's rules. When you're on a diet, have an eating disorder, disordered eating, none of your, if you talk to, like, 10 people with the same circumstances, your rules are all going to be different. There's no science here.
Right. You, and, like, you might find some similarities, but everyone has, like, you know, even the people who are OCD, like, my food can't touch, or only my like vegetables can't touch, you know, there's always some little nuance of it. And
that's
so,
right.
You know, as you're working with people, how do you start to get them to have the trust that it's okay to break some of the rules?
Yeah. I'm going to give me 1 second, because I want to talk, when I've done these podcasts before, people ask me, well, how did you figure this out and get better? And I think it's only fair that I say that, because it's like,
bring it on.
Well, first, I had to get renourished. And this is what I tell people, you know, and there weren't names for this stuff like 20 something years ago. You have to eat enough. You have to eat when you don't feel like it, because you're not going to feel hungry because your gastric motility is super slow from dieting. Right. You're going to have GI circumstances happen that you've got to just eat through sometimes. Mm. And you've got to have full permission, even when you feel like, my brain's saying, I want that, but then I feel guilty for wanting that. Mm. I'm hungry, but I'm not sure if I'm hungry. You just got to eat, essentially. Then the signals come back on board. And again, there wasn't the word intuitive eating wasn't a thing. It was just like, okay, so how did I eat when I was a kid? Well, I ate regularly. I ate when I was hungry. I mostly stopped when I was full. Sometimes I ate for fun, but whatever. And that was the end of it.
Right.
Okay. And so, well, the journey really is the trust issue of your mind and your heart and your body all getting on the same page. And there's a lot of factors. So how do I work with people? Getting you nourished. And it doesn't matter what your weight is. People come to me and say, oh, I can't be malnourished because I weigh 300 pounds. Like, if you're not eating enough for your body size, you're going to have some malnourishment on board, which is why you see like the pirate ship pendulum swing of like, I feel like I want all this or all that for a while. Like, let that happen. Right. And this is different from a free for all. I'm not asking you to dissociate from your eating and eat to the point of sickness. I'm not asking you to do that, but it's more about you might need to eat more certain foods that you restricted for a while to get back to this homeostasis and trusting that like, that's the way mammals do it. And because diet culture doesn't care about your preferences. It doesn't care about really nutritionally, because otherwise you wouldn't see these weird diets that omit food groups. So it's first with renourishment and some regularity of eating. Because you want your body to trust you that you're going to be not abandoning it when there's hunger, when there's tiredness, when there's whatever. And then the trust piece comes back on once you've been doing that for a while. And a while could mean 3 months. It could mean a year. It's like, okay, I'm starting to feel some signals. And then we're working through like, okay, if you're feeling signals, we want to make sure, is this like biologic hunger stuff? Is this mental hunger? Or are you having some kind of somatic thing? Like you're really sad and you feel the tightness in your throat. You can be so over-focused on what's happening somatically that we need to kind of like do a little phrase, what is this and can I be with it? So you can separate out like what's the sensory experience and what's this hunger experience? Because it happens all the time, mostly when we're feeling internally a lot up, a lot going on, that it either makes us want to not eat or eat in opposing situations. So I know that's a lot to kind of think about, but it's like you start to build trust when you start to unpack these little nuances of like, mental hunger, like what I think I should or should eat.
Right.
And then the physical hunger fullness and then this other stuff that like, you're like, wow, I have this whole other stuff going on inside myself that I never knew was happening or paid attention to that's impacting my digestion, my interception of my signals.
Right.
I'm like, yeah, there's no reason for you to like struggle with this for 10 years. Like we have all kinds of stuff going on inside.
Yeah. And it is that when you talk about this, the self-trust, it comes down to starting to get back into what your body's telling you. And so many of us bypass through many different ways to bypass.
That's right. All kinds of, you know, productive over focus. So some people are just keep themselves so busy.
Yes.
That they don't mean to bypass their hunger. This is probably the majority of clients I work with, like at least 50%, if not 75, have an aspect of their developmental coping strategies of like, if I just keep really busy, productive or not busy, then I won't feel what I'm feeling. And then you may bypass the hunger. And then some people either just stay malnourished until they work with this pattern, or they just start deprivation driven eating, which is like, I'm so hungry and the lid's blown off because I'm hungry and I'm finally relaxing and I feel safe. And so you eat all night and then you call yourself a binge eater. And that's not binging disorder. That's just my needs are 2,000 calories a day or whatever it is. And I've only eaten 300 since like from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. You know, so I'm screwed. I'm going to eat a lot of food tonight.
Right. You were basically hungry.
You were starving. You were past hungry and it felt like you didn't feel hungry because now you're just numb.
Right. And then when you let the floodgate open, your body was like, come on, we've been waiting for this.
You don't crave lettuce. You crave anything that's high energy,
Right.
You're going to choose calorie dense stuff.
Right. And, I've been working with my, I have a Facebook group. We're doing a challenge right now. And I've been working a lot with them on hunger cues because I know for me, for a really long time, I ate by the clock. And that was it totally just messed up a lot of systems in my body. And I was like, you know, unless you're a shift worker, there's no reason for you to eat by the clock. And even if you are a shift worker, I was like, I challenge you to, on days off, not eat by the clock, you know, not eat because if you don't eat at 3 o'clock, you're not going to eat anything. And just like sitting, like as soon as you think you're hungry, sit for 15 minutes and see how it feels.
Mm-hmm. And so Kim, what you're also offering your clients is a moment to yield, to like, okay, I'm going to sit for 15 minutes and just get back into relationship with what's going on.
Right. Especially, you know, and I'm sure a lot of your clients experience this during Rona times, that we're literally locked in our house 24/7. And that fridge was like, hey girl, how you doing? And I was like 15 minutes, like legit 15 minutes, like set a timer. Like if you're putting your kid in timeout, set a timer and just sit there for 15 minutes, because I know I'm guilty of it too. I don't want to do something. So the fridge gives me something to do. Or I finished something early and I have a little bit of time between the next meeting or appointment. So the fridge. Yeah. So it's like that 15 minutes is enough time. Like, I feel like it's, you know, and I tell them like, play. I'm like, is it 5 minutes? Is it 10 minutes? Is it 15 minutes? And play to see like what gives you, can get you out of that like immediacy of like, I need to fill this need. And is that need food?
That's right. You're helping them decode like when I feel fat, or, oh my gosh, I got to have the food. What we're really experiencing is I feel uncomfortable. And we're filtering that through the language of food and body.
Right.
Yeah. So we get a chance to like, and sometimes we can't sit with that. So we have to acknowledge like, well, I've got some work to do around, I need to build some more regulation skills. But sometimes it's like, oh, that really bums me out that you're taking the power out of my eating, Kim. But you're right. Is that I'm hungry for some joy. I'm hungry for being connected, whatever it is.
Right. Or my boss says something really shitty to me right now. And I wanted to, you know, I'm reaching for the fridge, or I got a bad email, or, you know, having to homeschool my kid is making me nuts. Like whatever it is.
Absolutely.
Helping them to kind of press the pause button, if you will, before they reach for food. And I'm like, I'm not above it. I'm like, I'm guilty of it too. But sometimes when I find myself in the kitchen, I'm like, is this on the plan today? And I have to turn around.
Yeah. I like you to use the word reach. I like to talk about, there's this cycle of things. You have to yield and then you have to get clarity. And a reach is like, you're reaching. I know people can't see this. You're reaching, you're thinking like, oh, like here's this pen. It's really pretty and I really want it. But if you don't have clarity, you don't really know, like, I don't really, like, this is really pretty and stuff, but this one's not as fun or as little boring as black one.
Right.
And if we don't have clarity, we end up just reaching, but we don't really know what's going to reach is going to meet the need. Or if you're more restrictive, it's like, oh, but I know I have clarity. I know I need the blue pen to get some needs met. But every time I pick the blue pen, in the past, this body met this implicit memory, this body memory of like, I pick what I, when I get my needs met, I get criticized for it. I'm not going to reach.
Right.
Not doing it.
Yeah. And I love that. I love that analogy because that's what it is. You know, if we took the blue pen and the purple pen for brownies or nachos, like that's, you know, what the reach is for. And, you know, as I always, I'm a kind of a smart ass. So I'll be like, okay, you know, great. If you make it to the kitchen and you truly are hungry and you will reach for broccoli raw, maybe thrown in the microwave for a few moments, or are you reaching for the brownie? Because if you're reaching for the brownie, it's something else. It's not hunger.
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. Sometimes it's like, I'm not sure what I'm hungry for. And that one I know works. And this one, I'm not sure if I like, or maybe I'm not sure if that's a diet behavior, or, you know, it's almost like suspending judgment to like, let's yield a second to like, yeah, what's going on?
Yeah.
It could be, it totally could be.
And I always say to them, like, I'm not saying you can't have brownies, but what I'm saying is it instinctive? I'm hungry and you reach for the fun food first.
Yeah,
or is it true hunger where you're like, yeah, I'll have the broccoli.
So it's, you know, helping them to kind of start to, like you said, get uncomfortable with making smarter choices sometimes, and not always going for the layup choice.
Yeah. I don't know how many, it's to be curious, and this is a whole other topic too about diet trauma around like how many people have hesitance like toward movement or to like, let's say just nutrient dense foods.
Yes. Yeah.
Because they pretty much, you've been traumatized by it. So it's like, you're not going to reach for that when you're hungry because it feels like punishment versus
yes.
How would you know inside right now if it's punishment versus what your body's asking for versus what's happening right now. So you really, there's a lot to work there, you know, with like the internal safety around making choices versus, you know, because even intuitive eating gets turned into a diet a lot. Like if I do intuitive eating right, I'll only want fruit and vegetables. Like, well, that's not true. It's like, we're very seasonal kind of people. So it's like in this season of life, more fat, more density. This season of life, it's colder, wetter, whatever. And starting to learn to trust that too. And it's more about this inside, like, okay, not instead of trying to get it right, it's how would I know inside?
Ooh,
what parts of me are letting me know inside what is needed and necessary? And that might take you a hot second to like, slow down here. I can't screw it up. You can't mess this up. Just take a second.
Oh my goodness. All right. I'm like writing so fast right now because I'm trying to like get all the thoughts you just said. Okay. Because I need to go back. All right. First, diet trauma. Woo! That is the best. I've never heard that. And I'm in love. I am in love because I can see it in myself. There's just certain foods that has taken me legit almost 10 years to eat again.
Me too.
But I they're just random weird foods. White fish. Took me a really long time to eat white fish. But I see it in my clients a lot that they get so it's kind of part trauma but part safety, right? So
they don't go without the other. Trauma happens without a landing, like a safe landing pad afterwards,
right?
You know, so can I tell a quick story about that real quick?
Bring it on.
Okay, so I have a video. It's probably my most popular video on YouTube around I didn't eat vegetables for 6 months. And again, nobody was teaching me to do this. I was just so desperate, again, to like, I would buy all the, you know, I'm a college student at the time in the late 90s or whatever. And it's like, I was buying all these fruit and vegetables, trying to be this goody, like, you know, dietitian student, eat all my fruit and vegetables. And I was just buying and throwing away.
Yep.
Didn't eat them. And so one day I'm like, I don't have the money for this. And it's just sad shame to see all this stuff go down the garbage. And I'm not getting any benefit from it. So stop buying it. And I'm just going to take this big leap off the cliff that if my body truly wants this, it'll tell me. And if I'm really going to get a micronutrient deficiency within 6 months, somehow I'll know because the liver like stores up some nutrients.
Right.
I think I trust my education here. I'll be okay. You've got 3 to 6 months of some stuff stored up if I need it. So I'm not going to eat anything unless I really good and want it. And if any part of me pressures it, I'm going to say no and roll on. So it would look like, you know, you haven't really had fruit and vegetables this week. Like, oh, I better get some apples. And I'd go to the store.
Right.
And it would feel terrible and compulsive. So I'm not doing it. So it took me 6 months. I did not eat a single fruit and vegetable. The closest I got was some marinara and a dip of breadstick in. That was it. And it's a true story. And then one day I was like, I think I want an apple. It was like one of those, like, I'm hungry and it's hot. And I could always think it was like, it was wet. And like, I think I want an apple. Are you sure? This is the conversation. Are you sure you want an apple? Because you could just be trying to like cut calories right now. I'm like, no, I really think I want an apple. So I tootled on to the grocery store and bought one apple. Cause I was like, oh, I'm going to get 10 apples. You can feel that compulsive, like dieting heart going to come back. And it's like, nope. If I want more apple, I will come back tomorrow. It's okay, honey. And so I didn't, I had that one apple and I didn't want any more. It was done over with. The grocery store the next week. I'm like, do you want apples again? Yeah, you can get one or two, not more than that. I'm like, okay. Anything else looks good? Think of an Asian pear. It's kind of similar to that. Take one of those.
Yeah.
And that was it. And I just kept titrating, like, to not push it to try to be healthy. And that's how it evolved, where like food became, and I made green beans with butter and salt. And I really had to like, how would I actually really enjoy eating this? not like that, but chopped up like this or cooked like that. And salads, it took me 10 years to eat a salad that I really enjoyed because I was just not having it. I so hurt myself with them. It was hurt. You know, it wasn't out of love. It wasn't out of nutrition. It wasn't out of anything. It was just like, this is the way I can cut calories and they're going to be really disgusting. And that's what you deserve. So there.
Yeah. No, and I love that story because that's what happens. You create these false narratives around food, or like you said, you went to the grocery store, you bought all the things because like it gave you the feels, but like the thought of now taking this next step of like taking out the bag of apples, you're like, yeah, and you would put it back in. And you,
I couldn't get that far. It was sort of a shaming experience of like, I chose this because I believe my body is so horrific that I have to eat these things. I couldn't even like open the bin. I would buy them, throw them in, and didn't look until I'm like, something smells in here.
Right. And you're like, it's time to throw them away. Yeah. So I think a lot of people fall in that category also, you know, for years, you know, we were told don't have this or don't have that, or carrots are high in sugar, or, you know, all the things that like, you know, as you start absorbing from the world and not taking the opportunity to say, is this for me? Versus, you know, right now, one of my biggest things that I'm like, makes me crazy, no sugar. Makes me so crazy. And I'm like, yes, an excess of anything, horrible. But just to cut sugar out because, you know, you read it somewhere is just like cutting off my hand because someone told me if I cut off my hand, I'd be a better person.
Right. Yeah. And so, made the question to be around sugar. Cause I know people struggle with this a lot right now. That's just the season of diet evolution we're in right now. It's just sugar is poison, whatever. Is, well, what if you had sugar, could you track what is your experience with eating it? How poisoned are you and did you get and what happened? Because you can't, for you to actually be free, you're going to have like these experiential moments to actually ever trust yourself.
Yeah. And you know, I like when you, one of my good friends, she calls them food experiments. She's like, you know, it's until the only way you're going to know anything is if you have food experiments and get back that trust of, you know, I always say that there's certain foods that were like my trigger foods that like, if I had them in the house, it was gone. You know, like I wouldn't realize that I ate the whole thing,
but
it was like, it could start with like, I'm going to buy a small package of something and see how I feel.
Yeah.
Did it cause me to like go down the rabbit hole? And sometimes I'm going to have to accept that I'm going to go down the rabbit hole, but I will never learn unless I start, you know, microdosing, if you will, the things that can eventually, you know, now I used to not be able to have peanut butter in the house. I can only buy it in the little individual serving packs. And I would only buy two. Because in the old days, old Kim could like start with like, oh, I'm going to have 2 tablespoons of peanut butter. And then it would be like 2 tablespoons of peanut butter would go on the dish I'm making and 2 tablespoons would go in my mouth. And then 2 more tablespoons, I walk back to the refrigerator. Then I'm like, I stand in front of the refrigerator and 4 more tablespoons go in my mouth. And the next thing you know, half the jar's gone. So I had to like, you know, say, well, that can't happen anymore. So I had to not buy it. And not be afraid of it, but know that like it was a trigger, and not because it was a trigger for me, not because you told me it was a trigger or I heard it at a party. Hey, you got to get peanut butter out of your house. And so it had to start with like little small micro doses of being the individual peanut butter in the house and being like, well, this is the only peanut butter I have. I'm making a recipe. And if I eat it all, my recipe is not going to work out well. And just like, slowly building up, like you said, your tolerance at like you started with an apple and you're like, okay, maybe I feel good with the apple. The apple's awesome. Maybe this week I'm going to get pears and maybe in a few weeks it's strawberries. But eventually you like now you and fruit, you're like, what fruit can I eat?
Right.
But it's having that like knowing that it's not an overnight thing, because your rules and your trauma didn't start on Monday, and they're definitely mm-hmm. not going to end mm-hmm. by Friday.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's cliche, right? It's just such a process. To know what edges you can push faster. And someone's like, yeah, I'm just going to have to look at that one over there. I'm not quite ready to go there yet. So
yeah,
whether it's food, movement, exercise, or food, movement, body image, whatever, you go at the pace of the slowest parts you can go.
Right. And it's funny.
So this actually sticks, basically.
Right. And, you know, and I'm glad you brought up the movement and the exercise piece, because it's all encompassing, right? Because I could have trauma around exercising where I feel that if I don't work out for 2 hours a day, you know, the world's going to end, or I have to run an X number of miles a day, or I'm going to put on 400 pounds. So it's all of the, you know, if you're listening, you know, think about some of the things that maybe you have either told yourself in the past that you've overcome. So two snaps up and a tic-tac. Or think of yourself of some of the things you might still be telling yourself that maybe you need to start thinking about, how do I work through that?
Yeah. I mean, the most common things I see with movement are coming at compulsively, coming at it. It's 50-50. People who come to see me, it's like half people are like, they got to learn how to like move less, and half people are learning how to like, I feel really hesitant, and I'm hesitant because I was pressured. I was told it was good for me. I've got trauma even around moving my body from other reasons.
Right.
I mean, I got like a 12-point checklist of the reasons why people exercise hesitant, you know? So it's like, that's real. We can stop shaming ourselves about that and start to look at like, yeah, these narratives we tell ourselves, like, how come exercise does feel unsafe? How come it feels unsafe to stop? And a lot of clients who are very compulsive with exercise, they don't know that like, wow, I'm using this to actually burn off a lot of like fight or flight adrenaline, not because I even think that I'm going to gain weight. A lot of clients, yeah, at first it's about the calorie thing. Oh my gosh, if I don't, I'm going to burn calories and then I'll gain weight. But they get below that layer and it's like, I don't know how to be with myself. I don't know who I am without all this stuff.
Yes.
And so they're having to like eventually blank slate it again and learn how to be a person who enjoys moving.
Yeah.
And it might be old activities, it might not, but it's like, it's going to look different. And that's definitely, for me, that was the hardest part, is like, oh, I was an athlete. I'm the person who would be the last one on the field, bloody and whatever, because I'm never going to quit, because this is my power. This is my worth. This is my stuff.
Right.
And learning like that survival strategy stuff, that is not where your value lies. This is a character strategy you've created because it worked and it probably helped you survive in those times, but it's 2020 now.
Right.
And we want to get in with like who you are. What your values are.
You like, oh my goodness, that was just powerful, because I think exactly what you said, it's identity. And so, you know, you're forced to ask yourself the question, you know, like your identity was athlete. You know, your identity might be, you're the girl who always eats healthy, or the girl who always works out, or the girl. And if some of those behaviors you starting to recognize are no longer serving you, you have to start, then you start questioning, well, who am I without being an athlete? Who do I become?
Yeah.
And
if the stuff started when you were young, it's like, well, I didn't get a chance to grow up. And now we're doing this in our 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 70s of like grieving what we missed and the developmental pieces we missed. And it's like, okay. And it's going to be awkward to kind of figure out, oh, I think I always told myself I like the color blue, but I actually don't. But I chose blue to say, because that got me some goodies from the people in power or whatever was going on, versus I think I like purple. And I feel like purple means I'm more weak and soft and emotional. And yeah, I'm going to have to work on that.
Yeah. It's tough, because it's like, you know, I too had a little bit of identity crisis because I did fitness competitions for 10 years. And so I only knew how to work out for aesthetics.
Right.
So then it was like, I'm like, well, but I still like going to the gym to exercise, but like, how do normal people do this? And it was just being able to like, look around and be like, oh, so you're only here for an hour? Okay. I could do an hour. And you just always, it was just like putting on a different pair of pants. And you're like,
that's right.
I'm like, are these, I don't know if these fit, or like you put your pants on upside down. And it's just like stepping into that new identity. But it's also like knowing that, or feeling comfortable that you're like, you know what, that old identity is no longer serving me.
It's not who you really were. It's not who you really were in the first place.
Right. Or I'm working too hard for it.
Yeah. That's right. There's more to you than like, you know, winning the game or the competition. That like, when you put all of your energy into this endeavor to not feel how you're feeling, or something is too much or not enough. What you find is like, you don't know really where you belong if you stop doing this.
Right. And so it's like, you know, I love it how, you know, when you first started the work, you're like, I'm just supposed to tell people how to eat. Like that's my job. And then you're
that's my job. And like,
no, because like even, you know, as I came out as a personal, you know, as a personal trainer, and I thought that was my job. I'm like, how many bicep curls? And, you know, it was more like, it was like, how do people live? And, then now, like, it, you know, now it's like even deeper of like, it's the mindset piece of like, how do you now identify as someone who is this new person who isn't no longer always on a diet, person who's no longer afraid to eat white fish? You know, how do you become that person?
Right. Yeah, I know. How do you become that person? It is being willing to be uncomfortable, to not abandon yourself.
Yeah.
To try these things and to make mistakes, and that wasn't quite right, and that's okay. And then you might bump up against other things that you forgot about, you didn't know was an issue. And that kind of brings me to some of the trauma piece of the work I do, because what I was finding, I feel like there's a certain percentage of people who can get renourished, start like more body-based attuned eating, get their relationship with movement cleaned up, work on their body image and learning how to decode I feel fat means I feel comfortable, and you know, unpacking all their diet mentality stuff. And I call it soft eyes themselves into like, oh, who says that like a rounder stomach is less good? And, you know, doing all that really deep work. Even with all that, there are some of us that are going to be like, that's really, I'm all on board. This is really great. And then you're going to bump up against a party that one day you're like, I can't do this. I'm out. I'm back. And you feel really revved up, or you feel dissociative. And that's when we're bumping in to like some of this overcoupling of like, my trauma is coupled up with me not being, not like trauma is coupled up with like sensations. And now that I'm feeling so much more sensation, emotions, thoughts, everything's getting more congruent, your PTSD starts showing up, basically.
Yeah.
And that's where I started intersecting and studying. It's like 2011, the trauma piece of things, and understanding the neurobiology of like stress.
Yes.
And studying polyvagal theory. And if you don't understand, like we all have a window of tolerance. And when we go above and below that, that's where you see disordered eating patterns. And thoughts and emotions and like behavioral patterns that like aren't congruent with like what you want to be doing. So this is where I see lots of people, maybe 50%, maybe a little less, a little more, or people who come to see me like I knew I had trauma, but I didn't think it was that. I thought it was just compartmentalized over here. But right. I see now that I'm more embodied. Part of me like wants to get out of Dodge and like go back to all my behaviors, and I don't care about this anymore, and I just want to be numb.
Right.
And so if you're, I'm just saying that it's like a thing of you're experiencing that, you're not crazy, but these are protective strategies that you've got to build a window. Like basically it's a stress tolerance. You got to build a big old window for, so you can do life and work on this trauma stuff and not go back to eating and exercise stuff. I just want to like validate if you're like, I've been trying to do intuitive eating for like 3 years, 10 years, and I'm still not there. It's like, it's not because you're not doing it right. It's because something else is coupled up with it.
Right. And also, like, to further that point, you know, it's kind of a stair step process, because it's like, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, okay, I got over the peanut butter thing, but I'm like, okay, but I still have to work on this and this and th- and like it, you know, I feel like, you know, you'll always be working on something, you know, it's not like,
yeah, and there's no finish line. Yeah.
There's no finish line. And trust me, like, I have the patience of a gnat, and and there's just, you know, when it, I don't know what it is, but when it comes to like my body, I had to have the patience, because it's like, you know, especially when things go haywire, it's like you have to start at the root. And sometimes, yeah, you know, like, yeah, you've mentioned multiple times, it's an experiment. So it's like, is it your gut? Oh, okay. Is it a hormone problem? Is it this? And you're like, I think many people think when they come to us that, like, automatically I'm going to look at you and be like, oh, Tracy, you're going to need 4 apples and 3 sweet potatoes and 3 days of cardio, and you're going to be fine. And meanwhile, you're like, you've been struggling with your weight for decades. And you're like, oh, honey girl, I wish I could solve it in an hour session. But it could be, you know, you have diet trauma. Maybe you have binge eating things. Maybe you have a lot of rules we have to start to, like, break apart.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So, you know, it's not as much as diet culture wants you to believe that, you know, buy this book and all problems will be solved. You know, it's a little bit more nuanced. It is multiple steps. It's multiple, as you, I love the word experimental, that you are, we're playing. I guess experiment's better than playing. It's like, we're just trying to play out the different scenarios that have been going on in your brain for God knows how long.
Yeah. Well, and to bring, I call it some dual awareness of, like, okay, here's your adult self. And you know that, like, you don't really believe that, like, there's one right body size, but there's the other part of you inside that's like yelling at you. If you don't go on that diet before that cruise, when you see your mom and dad, that you're not going to be safe. You're going to be criticized, and the world's, I mean, you feel really small, and like it is the end. Being able to notice that in yourself versus it being all blended up, and you think that that's true.
Right.
And understanding that there's different parts of us that like are trying to get us to go back to these things because it feels like safety, because it was then. And we're trying to get ourselves to, like, have enough safe, like, you know, brave and safe experiences with, like, people who can co-regulate with us that don't shame the crap out of us.
Right.
To be like, oh, let's look at that, because what I know about you is, and what your body is saying is this. And I'm just really curious, like, what's happening inside right now that's, like, firing that off, because I'm just looking at your journals, or I've talked to you this whole 45 minutes and it's like, that's not congruent, but some part of you believes that. So I'm wondering how come, like, what's going on?
Yeah. 100%. And I think, you know, a lot of us don't want to look under the hood. You know, we want it to be a green smoothie and some cardio.
Call it a day. Exactly.
Right.
And I tell people, like, well, we can get kind of close to that in the long term, for sure. Like, you can just pick whatever's good enough or whatever. But right now, it's like, you don't have a platform for being able to do that without life being chaotic.
Right.
We got to build you a new baby. Really, really good, solid, smooth foundation of this new house you're building, your new internal structure of, like, being able to be in the world and be around dieters. And it ain't about you. Mm. You're not triggered. It's like, oh gosh, I'm so glad I'm not doing Whole30, because been there, done that. And they are so suffering by everything they're telling me, not because I'm projecting that I suffered. It's like, they're telling me, like, that this is just what I have to do to get a better body. And you can tell they're like, I don't want to do this, but I have to, because I'm so terrible. My body's so terrible. And you're not thinking, oh, boy, I can't talk to my friend anymore because she triggers me. It's like, oh, I just want to tell you that, like, you do not have a bad body, and be able to mean that in your bones, even if you're bigger than them, you know, or smaller than them. It's like,
right. just teaching them to feel good in the moment right now?
Well, I think that we have to build our capacity and resilience, because diet culture is not, oh, you guys don't like us anymore, we're going to go away.
Right.
It's a fight. It's a fight. And we're going to build our muscles for like being around it and not being like part of that system.
Well, and I love the word resilience. Because I just did another podcast yesterday, and we talked about resilience. And she said, you know, as a culture, resilience isn't something that we in America teach a lot. You know, we don't teach that you can do hard things, and that if you do hard things, they're not always going to, you know, you mentioned earlier how it's like some things are going to work out and some things aren't. It's either a lesson or a learning. And that's what resilience is. And, you know, sugar, cutting it out, white knuckling it, is that good for you or is it not? And being able to make that decision on your own versus diet culture tells me I must get rid of everything in order to live a healthy life.
Well, yeah. And they're worried right there. You give away your embodiment and you give away your autonomy by somebody else telling you like what your body needs all the time and every little time and dosage, and it's never okay. And this is okay now. And the thing is, the rules change, you know, and that's why there's so much chaos. And that's the point of it. You know, we can't have you being settled and grounded and embodied, because then you might do something productive versus constantly chasing the next thing.
Yeah, agreed. And I think that's a good place to like make our pivot. What about people who are chasing the next thing, right? You know, I wanted to lose 40 pounds by Friday and the scale hasn't moved. So what's the next thing? What's the next thing? I know that it's 100% a mindset thing. I know it's a habit thing, but how do I start to break free from that?
So if you came to me and said, I have to lose 40 pounds by Friday, I'm like, well, what's going to happen Friday that we need 40 pounds less of you for? Like basically, how come you want to lose 40 pounds? Like what's on the other side? Like what we talked about earlier. And where did you get that from that you feel like that's necessary? You know, really just unpacking what's the physical, the emotional, right, the mental, the like familiar cultural stuff. You got to know why you're making these decisions. Most of us want to lose weight because we think I'll be prettier, I'll be more attractive. Somebody told me I'll be healthier. And then we just do it because we want to be a part of something and we want to be safe and belong. That's it. We want to be lovable. We want to be safe. We don't want to be alone. And so we just react and we do it. We don't even think about, is it true? What will happen? What's the probability? It's a total emotional decision from a place of not enoughness.
Yeah. And you're right. I love those questions because, you know, it's thinking to yourself, is it a you thing or a, you know, did you go to the doctor and he said, lose the 40 pounds and you won't go on blood pressure medication?
So the next question is like, is it people tell me, like, what about my health? My doctor said, well, what I know is that blood pressure is higher. Blood pressure is created by a bunch of different sources. Weight may or may not be one of them, but you have to look at the research about like, well, how sustainable is it for you to lose those 40 pounds? What happens to your nutrition status, your mental health status, your emotional status, if you're to do it that way, versus here's the other 10 ways in which blood pressure can be improved with maybe not weight loss.
Yeah.
And so let's lay it on the table so you can have some choice points and what are pros and cons of everything.
Yeah. Cause it makes me crazy that, you know, still in this day and age that it's weight that determines a lot of medical doctors' decisions.
Well, I don't think their medical books say anything different yet.
So. Agreed. I was like, the medical book was written in 1955, and those charts, you know, I think I read somewhere that the weight height charts came in like the 40s.
Metropolitan Life insurance companies. They presented those to the doctors, just trying to figure out a way to like classify who they thought was healthy, who they can charge more, you know, the whole thing. You can Google this information, but yeah. It's not really based on like some kind of thing. Like we had 30 years of following people of all different ethnic backgrounds and their food intake and their trauma and their economic status and their food, their movement. And we tracked all this and smoking, we tracked it all and we separated it out. Cause if they did that, that would take 50 years to do. We're not going to do that.
Right.
Two, then they would have nobody to charge more because it's going to be so varied.
Well, and I laugh because as you said, you know, like they did that to help categorize people to figure out what to charge. And they did it in like, I think it was like in the 40s or the 50s. So we yeah. would have had plenty of time to get accurate data.
Well, you know, that's too practical, Kim.
Yeah, I know.
That doesn't make anybody like make billions of dollars.
Well, so. That's true. But it always makes me crazy when, you know, my husband, his doctor is 100% on weight, and you know, he's a cardiologist, so I get it. You know, the more weight on your heart, blah blah blah. But he like my husband, like it's always like it's like a final exam, like go to the doctor tomorrow.
Yes.
And I'm
yes,
like,
that's why people don't go. They don't want that pressure and that lecture. You know, I would have your listeners do some Google searches on the Cooper Institute, because his whole jam was about like looking at fitness yeah. levels.
Yeah.
So to have your husband even like, hey, wait a minute, before we get like a blood pressure of like 200 over whatever before this appointment, it's like, wait a minute, these people, they just want to see the fitness level. All the people who are cardiovascular fit, regardless of size, had better longevity. Who cares? Right. Don't worry about your BMI, because that's not going to help you get fitter.
Yeah. And I always say that to him, but my husband's one of those people, he needs a third party endorsement. And I was like, I go, look, I'm like, you work out four times a week. You eat well. I'm like, that the weight that he says you should be, it's a freaking arbitrary number. And I'm like, I think
you know what the question would be? When's the last time he weighed that? Was he at 15, 20?
Yeah.
Like, how are you going to weigh a little boy weight again? You're never going to weigh what you yeah. weighed when you were, right?
Yeah. I don't know what, I'm going to ask him, I'm going to write that question down, because I'm going to say to his doctor's name, Rabinowitz, if you're listening, Rabinowitz, sorry.
we don't hate you. We just want you to like, look at people holistically.
Yeah. Right. And because I want to know, like, you know, he's been Philip's doctor for a really long time, at least 20 years. So I at least want to say, you know, what number are you, you know, are you putting it in the last 5 years, the last mm-hmm. 3 years? Like or are you like 205 is what you should weigh?
Yeah, it feels like that, right?
I mean, the numbers he comes up with, it feels, because like for my husband, like, yeah, there's certain things he could clean up, but given everything else, he's pretty good, you know, but yeah, it's like, yeah, you know, yeah. Then it's always that game of like enjoying life or ideal weight. And so it's like, I always say to him, I'm like, I would rather you have a life that you enjoy versus giving up all the things that you could hit this weight yeah. number that, you know, Rabinowitz wants you to have.
Yeah. It's tough. I mean, again, all that stuff isn't quite congruent, which makes it really scary, because again, not everybody's a doctor,
right.
And doctors don't tend to ask all, again, the questions I was just proposing. It's like, if we're looking at all of these things over a long period of time, like, I think we'll get some accurate information about what needs to happen. And that never happens. So it's like,
right. And now with Corona, like everything's all skewed. we're never going to have those. That isn't going to happen for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
So I want to thank you so much for being on the show. But before mm-hmm. we wrap it up, I have three things. One, where can people connect with you? They've listened to you and they're like, you know, this lady's got some good stuff to say. How can they connect with you?
I guess the easiest way, probably two places I'm mostly, is my website. So it's just my name, TracyBrownRD.com. Or I guess Facebook, my page, so TracyBrownRD. I do lots of reader question videos. it's just super fun to connect with people that way. And they see me, they can interact. And so I do those pretty much Monday, Wednesday, Friday. So you can come live.
Awesome.
If you hate Facebook, they all get uploaded to YouTube. They're there. So, at the end of the week, they all get uploaded. So you can interact with me there. So yeah.
Awesome. And so Tracy, what is one thing that makes you feel magical?
I don't know if this is magical, but I feel like I have been given this gift to be able to like see all the different tendrils of what's happening, but help people unpack this stuff in a really pragmatic way towards who they really are. Like, here's the end result, like how their life might be and who they might be and gosh, what they've got the mojo to do. Huh. And here we are here. And it's like, starting to break all that down to like, these are just the things. I mean, all these things happen steps. And I know we have to be really patient for the millimeters to get there. But I tend to see who people really are underneath all this anxiety, all this like fat phobia, all this anxiety, shame, worry. I know that's not who you are.
Right.
This is out here. Like I know when I meet people, I'm like, oh man, I don't say this until later on down the line. Like, you're going to be really good at blah, blah, blah. And they're like, what? And I'm like, mm-hmm. And they end up doing that at some point because their food and body image and the trauma all kind of like point to like, here is this protective strategy against or protecting like what I felt like who I was too much, but yeah. It's all pointing there.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's magic. It's just like being able to really learn how to see and hear people.
Yeah, I think that is a big thing. I think like, especially during this whole diet conversation, mm-hmm. I think the biggest thing is people are either don't know how to be seen, afraid to be seen, or maybe they were told, they were too much.
Oh yeah, I was going to mention that. It's like, I feel like we've got to really unpack all these word curses y'all got going on because it's like people are told they're too much, their needs are too big. Your body's too big and your mouth is too big and your needs are too much and they don't matter. And this is sometimes overtly said, but it's really mostly said by what isn't done or right. What isn't, how they weren't seen or how they weren't heard.
Yeah. So we could go on for 400 hours because there's so many.
I know. It's like, this is like part one of who knows how many. So
I know it's like, dieting is like an onion, like, or those Russian dolls, like you open up one, there's another doll, Like it's just so many layers. And like, as soon as you say one thing, I'm like, whoa, I got some notes on that. I mean, I have a whole notebook of like things you've said that I'm just like, whoa, that was just some really great stuff. But I want to thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate it. And I really, really, really appreciate when I find RDs who are like, I need to break from the mold. I really love that because we're more than, the food pyramid.
Well, I think this is these lived experiences, I'm like, wow, like I can't collude with the stuff. Like if I teach this, this is like me teaching my eating disorder to people. I can't do it. Like I was in a really bad way at that time. I'm like, what am I going to do? I didn't know you could be an entrepreneur. Have your own private practice when I was 20. I was like, I have to work in the hospital and that's not my only option and I'm screwed. It's like, I just knew I couldn't do it. And so I had to get out of school as soon as possible and then start finding people that have been doing this for a long time and just like, okay, I need you to teach me your stuff and I'm going to bug you until you do. And then learn my own stuff as I went along. And it doesn't mean this dietitians like this don't care about nutrition or health. It just means that we think there's a different way to get there.
Yes, absolutely. There's many, many, many paths to your goal. Well, thank you so much for this conversation. It's been awesome. And I'm going to, when it goes live, you guys, you are just going to blow your mind. Do me a favor. If there's someone who needs to hear this conversation, be sure to screenshot it and tag myself and Tracy on it. But thank you so much for this great conversation.
Ken, it's just been an honor. Like I said, we could talk for hours, but I'm hoping that more than one person, but at least one feels like, oh, whoa, that's what I'm going through. I'm not alone. So that's important.
Exactly.
Thank you.
thank you for listening to the Fit Girl Magic podcast. If you've made it this far, yay. I'm thinking you enjoyed the show. Let's continue the conversation on Instagram. You can find me at Kim Jefferson Coach. In order for me to keep sharing this message, do me a favor and leave me a 5-star review on iTunes. While you're there, don't forget to subscribe so that you won't miss an episode. New episodes are available every Wednesday. The Fit Girl Magic podcast is intended to provide you with tips, tools, and strategies that will help you make better decisions about your health. I really appreciate your feedback and your support. Thank you so much.